Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Live with the Dementia Whisperer, Laura Wayman, founder of the Dementia Whisperers Incorporated. Laura Wayman, nationally recognized expert on dementia and author of A Loving Approach to Dementia Care, published by Johns Hopkins University Press, joins you and 16 million caregivers with real answers and help, with love, wisdom, and compassion for your personal questions and concerns on the dementia journey. Live with the Dementia Whisperer, Laura Wayman. Call in at 929-477-1393. That's 929-477-1393. And now, live with the Dementia Whisperer, Laura Wayman. Are you caring for a loved one, a resident, or a client who is presenting dementia symptoms and challenging behaviors? Our vision is to open up discussion in order to greatly improve quality of care and excellence in service to individuals with Alzheimer's disease or any dementia and related illnesses, and to lend a reassuring hand to their caregivers and families. This is an interactive call-in show, and we want to hear from our listeners. Don't you forget that our call-in line is 929-477-1393, and we do love to hear from you. In fact, Laura Wayman has graciously offered our first two callers today a free copy of her Loving Approach to Dementia Care, published by Johns Hopkins University, an outstanding book. Her second book is coming out next year. So our first two callers today to 929-477-1393 will receive a copy of Laura Wayman's groundbreaking book on dementia. And now it is time for Laura Wayman, the Dementia Whisperer. Hello, Laura.
Hello, Scott. It's so nice to hear your voice, as always. How are you doing there in beautiful Houston?
Well, beautiful Houston is basically melting down, Laura, with 100 degrees on the patio. And we have been dealing with air conditioning issues, which the worst time to do that, of course, is the middle of summer, and that's when you do. But gratefully, I have found a solution, and we're moving forward. So I'm doing much better. Thank you for asking.
Well, that is wonderful. I am glad to hear that you found a solution, because there is nothing worse than trying to sleep when it is so hot. That is just awful, isn't it? I have to say,
yes.
and don't hate me for this, but I love it when it's hot. But I'm used to hot in California here with dry hot, and it is so different than what you deal with every day.
Yeah, this is basically, Houston is a swamp that they pump the water out. It keeps coming back, by the way. But they pumped the water out and started building this town, which is now the fourth largest in the U.S. of A. So pretty much without air conditioning, there would not be a Houston, Texas. I'm pretty sure of that.
Well, Scott, while we're on the subject of Houston, perhaps you could tell our listening audience a little bit about what you do, other than being my esteemed co-host and producer. Just take a minute and talk a little bit about all the wonderful things you do there in Houston as well.
I will, but I'm so excited also today to engage our great guest, Rick Laubert, and we'll be talking to Rick in just a few minutes, but it's very gracious of you, Laura, to let me share a little about whom I am with the listeners out there. And yes, I've been in media for over 35 years, all formats, whether it's television, radio, I've actually printed my own newspaper, lots of online, internet, new media, social media. And now working in the arena of senior care, of course, a lot of that brought about by, A, my personal experience with senior care and also cancer, and then the advent of beginning to work in the field and connecting with the really wonderful lady named Laura Wayman, creating video work for her and meeting her and her lovely husband, Stephen, my great wife, Faye, and I becoming fast friends with them. My wife, Faye, is the marketing director for Houston for Benevolent Home Care, which has great offices in Austin, Houston, and San Antonio, very successful there. So she's out working that way. And I support people through media here in Houston, working with FindHoustonSeniorCare.com, a wonderful website by Catherine Watson, who I work with. I do marketing for her and my own video production and other media. So thank you for letting me share that, Laura.
Absolutely, my pleasure. And so I want to address our dear listening audience. Please keep in mind that I am giving away 2 free books to the first 2 callers today. So you want to call in and get to know our esteemed guest here today as well. We're going to be talking about that in just a second. I do want you to know, if you are a caregiver, you truly are not alone. If you have worries and concerns or anxieties or want advice, inspiration, or encouragement on your dementia care journey, which, by the way, is one of the hardest things you will ever have to do, you have tuned into the right place. This is an hour of great information, encouragement, inspiration, and so stay with us. We'll be taking your calls and talking about the newest information on perhaps causes of dementia, how to better manage the symptoms, and today we're going to spend time learning how to be a better caregiver with some guidance from a guest that I'm very excited for Scott to introduce. So, Scott, you want to go ahead and let's jump in, because I know that our guest has so much to talk about. I know our hour is going to fly by, as always. So would you mind just giving a wonderful introduction to our guest today?
Absolutely, Lauren. By the way, Rick is the publisher of 2 great books on caregiving and the caregiver's journey, and much from his personal experience, you'll find out so much more about that, and also a published author, and that's why I was complimenting him on his great literary style before the show, because his books are really easy to read, therefore accessible, therefore you gain knowledge. That's a great thing. Today's show is focusing on the Caregiver's Guide for Canadians and the Successful Caregiver's Guide. You might say, I guess, the U.S. A companion to the Caregiver's Guide for Canada in many ways. And our guest this week is author Rick Lovere. Rick is a former co-caregiver for both his own aging parents. His father had Alzheimer's disease, his mother had Parkinson's disease, and then leukemia, which is really the second fatal stroke for her. He's known about the complexities of caregiving firsthand, has written extensively on caregiving and seniors' issues for print and online markets. He's guested on radio talk shows, television new programs, serves as a volunteer basis for the Board of Directors of Caregivers Alberta, that was formerly the Alberta Caregivers Association. His book, The Caregiver's Guide for Canadians, provides valuable tips to help you provide good elder care while balancing all the demands on your time. And it says here, all the dementia on your time, Laura. I don't know if that was a Freudian slip or not, but I wasn't going to say that. We don't want to get there yet. Rick also provides tips for caregivers on his Facebook.com/Caregiver's Guide for Canadians, or Twitter him, if you love Twitter, CDN Caregiver, or visit his website, ricklovere.com. And Rick, welcome to Live with the Dementia Whisperer.
Good evening, Laura. Good evening, Scott. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you
so much. Would you suspect that maybe my fingers have a little muscle memory when I go to type something that starts with a D-E?
Yeah, there's some. Yeah. Yes, I do.
It is so good to have you here with us, Rick. Thank you so much. And we want to find out from you all about how Canadians are coping with this, because you seem to be kind of the Canadian caregiver guru, if I'm not mistaken. And so I'm excited for you to talk about what your journey has been like and how you are helping those in the wonderful, wonderful country of Canada. So, Rick, tell us all about you.
Wow, that's it's a big question, and thank you very much for the kind words. I appreciate that. My caregiving journey began with or saw me being a co-caregiver for both my mother and my father. As Scott had mentioned, I was helping to care to help and support both my mother and my father a number of years ago when they were both alive. Mom had Parkinson's and leukemia, and Dad had Alzheimer's disease. You know, collectively I worked with my two sisters, my older and my younger sister, and, you know, took on a whole number of newfound responsibilities and very unexpected responsibilities for them. You know, as a caregiver, I shuttled them to and from doctor's appointments. I helped look after their daily banking and paid their monthly bills, helped with their investments. You know, I moved them repeatedly. I ultimately became Dad's joint guardian and alternate trustee as well. So there was a lot of work, and you know, as I said, I was very unprepared for this. I think a lot of caregivers sort of fall into the role and are not prepared. But fortunately, I did have the help of my two sisters, and that's what saw me through.
And you know, I hear that often, Rick. Everybody who I talk to, or almost everybody that I talk to, they say they fell into this and it wasn't voluntary. And you know, when I'm training caregivers, I say, how many of you feel free to raise your hand who volunteered for this? You know, we don't raise our hand and say, please let me take care of my elderly parent. Please let me be a primary caregiver. And we are not prepared for this. So that's why I was so excited when you contacted me, because there is not enough information like your two books, The Caregiver's Guide for Canadians and The Successful Caregiver's Guide. There's just not enough information, and most of us are just kind of blogging along and having all these interesting road hazards that we have to navigate on this interesting, just this whole journey of caring for your loved ones, caring for any elderly, and then I of course have that little niche of the extra little challenge. I call that little and laugh at the same time, of when there is dementia involved. So Rick, when you were in that whole caregiving scenario, talk about some of the challenges that you have learned to kind of preload this information into those folks that are reading your book.
One of the most difficult challenges was standing by almost helplessly as Mom and Dad declined. I think I had a much worse, a harder time with my father with his Alzheimer's disease. I lost him twice over the course of time. You know, he eventually forgot who I was. That had to be one of the hardest days of my life when he asked me who I was. And second again, when he died. You know, Alzheimer's, as you know, there's no cure for it yet. You know, we can only hope that someday that time will come. You know, so there was nothing I could do over the course of time except make him comfortable and provide him the best quality of life possible. You know, another challenge had to be finding help. You know, there are resources out there, a good number of them, and you know, they're there. But I think caregivers, including me at the time, don't know where to start looking, or even how to ask for help, or even, you know, being able to ask for help as well. You know, I firmly believe that caregivers across the board, they like to do the job themselves, to take on everything themselves, and they feel that responsibility,
yes,
that obligation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so releasing the strings, as it were, is another challenge as well. So those are a couple of big ones that I can think of off the top of my head.
Laura, I just want to remind listeners that we have a call-in line, and we have two copies today for our first two callers for questions on the air for Laura Wayman or Rick or myself, or just a general question on caregiving, dementia, whatever it might be. It's a great way to get a copy of Laura Wayman's fantastic book, Loving Approach to Dementia Care. And our call-in line is always the same, 929-477-1393. This is co-host Scott Cluthie. And by the way, just so you know, Laura is not down in the other end of the hall. She's having to use the cell phone today. So that's why she sounds so particularly special. So I just want people to know that. But I do want to, if I might, Laura, I wanted to ask Rick a little about something that I think is important in his books. And that has to do with, Rick, why is it important for someone who is maybe not even in the position yet of caregiving? Because, frankly, I think anybody alive on this planet at some point is going to be a caregiver in one form or another. And caregiving for senior citizens, whether it's your partner, your mom, your dad, your uncle, your sister, it could be anyone, even early onset of Alzheimer's. About defining caregiving and what kind of caregiver are you? I think that's an interesting distinction and conversation because too often in life, Rick, I find that what we do, especially in crisis situations, high-pressure situations, emotionally charged situations, is we start comparing ourselves to somebody else's performance model. And that not be really who we are and even appropriate for us, but we can do that and not give ourselves credit for the kind of caregiver we are. Talk a little about that.
Not sure if I'm following your question.
Well, you talk about independent caregiver, a sharing caregiver, a collaborative caregiver, a coordinating caregiver, all these different kinds, a delegating caregiver. These are different distinctions within the idea of caregiving.
Okay, right. Yeah, I touch on those in my book, and you're right. There are different levels and different categories of caregiving. Let's just remind myself here of that.
It's kind of along the same lines that I talk about. You have to build your village because you're going to have villagers that all kind of specialize in different departments, and caregiving can be so overwhelming. It is a full-time job in itself. So, building that village of folks that can help you in so many different ways, coming from different directions, and also that helps the family to be of support as well, because there'll be certain family members that are really good delegators and they're the ones that, make the phone calls and can, get on the phone and do that. But then there is the caregiver that actually does the actual physical caregiving, that family member that is comfortable with that if that's necessary. So, Rick, you talk a little bit about that and how everybody kind of gets a different title in this whole journey.
Exactly. Just to define and to offer a few more characteristics on each of those types of caregivers, beginning with the independent caregiver, I find them, I would classify them as, very determined, very motivated, maybe a little stubborn, whether we like to admit that or not. Those are the types of caregivers that like to do everything themselves and feel that responsibility. They don't want to share the work. They're doubtful that anyone could possibly exceed their own expectations. A sharing caregiver, that's, as the term dictates or suggests, you'll be balancing the responsibilities of your own life and those of caregiving with others. You're very team-oriented. You work well with others. That's a sharing caregiver. The other person may be a family member or maybe a friend. It doesn't matter. I think I was very much a sharing caregiver. As I said, I worked with my two sisters, and that arrangement worked out very well. There's a collaborative caregiver. That person is practical, sensible, realistic, quite resourceful too, I would think. I think you're pretty lucky if you fall into that category. A collaborative caregiver will actually have the necessary resources to call upon when and where needed. So that's probably the difference between a collaborative caregiver and a sharing caregiver. And you know, a coordinating caregiver is another type of distinction. Those type of individuals like to research, they like to analyze, they like to organize everything, they like to get their fingers into it. And finally, a delegating caregiver, the type of person who's quite confident, leads well, very dynamic, and person is the least hands-on from the group of them. You know, he or she will like to farm out the work to others.
And it's so true, and I'm sure that our listeners, as they're hearing these kinds of descriptions, once again, they may be seeing, you know, oh, my sister is that, and my brother is that, and aren't they lucky if their family can team up together? Because I always say, kind of tongue-in-cheek, is there's nothing like dementia to bring out all the dysfunction in the family as well, but when you can work together and work together as a village, and take on these different roles that you're good at, it's certainly going to help, because otherwise a primary caregiver who does not receive help from family or professionally, they're the ones that have to wear all of those hats, because it's so necessary when you're caring for a loved one, especially if there are those challenges like we had talked about with dementia. And Scott, it looks like we might have a caller who's waiting that might want to ask some questions of Rick as well.
Actually, so, I talked to them already. They're listening online, but they don't want to ask a question on the air.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, welcome to our online listeners. That we do welcome that as well. And we can always encourage them, even if they just make a comment or ask a question online, then they can have the opportunity to receive a free book. So just think about that. So we might even want to give that listener a free book, Scott, just because they're calling in and listening and supporting us. So we'll have to talk about that, right?
They actually have your book already, Laura. They love you.
Oh, that's so sweet. They need to come online and talk about it. That's okay. I'm just happy that they're listening. So, you know, Rick, I have some questions about what's going on in Canada, because I travel all over the United States, and I am basically an expert, kind of the voice for those caregivers who are dealing with dementia. And I know that this is a silent pandemic here in the United States, and I know it's worldwide too. But tell me, what kinds of resources are there in Canada? Are you feeling like that the Canadians are being progressive, that they're thinking about things like that? Can you talk a little bit about that?
I could address that. You know, what's happening in Canada, I think, is what's happening elsewhere with an aging population. We have a very large number of baby boomers in our country that are getting older, and that includes me. And, you know, with our aging population, more seniors means more family caregivers are going to be required. You know, just I'll throw out a statistic. This is a recent one. You know, currently 14% of our country's population is now age 65 years plus. Comparatively, in the States, you have about 65.7 million caregivers, making up 29% of the U.S. adult population. You know, obviously, the numbers are much more vast in the States, being a much larger country, but, you know, the caregiving doesn't have any borders. You know, we still deal with many of the same issues and have the same problems. You know, what's happening in Canada? I mean, we, like I said, we do have the resources available. I think, and I strongly believe that because the problem is only going to get worse over the course of time, and that number of seniors will increase and the number of caregivers will increase, you know, more help needs to be provided at different levels, whether that's local, whether that's provincial, whether that's national through the national government. You know, and that could include any number of things, but more help needs to be provided, especially for the caregiver. I think a lot of people focus more on the senior and the caree, as it is, or the care recipient. You know, the caregiver in this particular situation is often the forgotten, the ignored individual, and that's unfortunate because the caregiver does a lot of important work and should be recognized and should be supported as well.
Absolutely. I talk a lot about that in my book, Rick, because I am very familiar with my own personal journey because I lost my mom as a caregiver caring for my dad who had Alzheimer's, and she just simply could not bear any longer that impact, that stress, the negative, just the whole life that she was living, trying so desperately to care for him. She did not know to ask for enough help. And so my mission and my vision as the Dementia Whisperer is to make sure that those caregivers understand that when you take your loved one to the physician and that physician says to you, your loved one has some cause of some progressive and permanent loss of normal brain function and is exhibiting these dementia symptoms, such as the leading cause of Alzheimer's, when they're given that diagnosis of Alzheimer's for their loved one, they really receive a very similar tragic diagnosis of being a caregiver who is the primary caregiver for their loved one with some cause of dementia. And that indeed can be a terminal diagnosis, just like Alzheimer's is indeed a terminal diagnosis. Because 68% of the time, if that caregiver does not ask for help, they get sick and go first. And yes, we are focusing our care and all of that on that person diagnosed with some cause of dementia. Well, we should. It's the most horrific illness of our time. But we cannot forget that hidden hero caregiver who is spending all of their time thinking for that person who has a broken thinker, and yet they still have to think for themselves as a caregiver as well. It is just so much of a crisis in our country. We absolutely have to successfully support these caregivers as well. And they are so important to me, and I can see that they are so important to you and to Scott and to all of our listeners. You know, hooray for that caregiver, but it's just getting in there and helping them. That's what we need to figure out how to be better at that.
You know, my point exactly, and, you know, it's like I said, the caregiver is the forgotten entity, and that is to be expected. You know, everybody seems to be focused on the senior and, you know, his or her health condition and the fact that he or she is getting older, and, you know, this is terrible, and what are we going to do? You know, but, you know, there's the caregiver, the family member, often enough that is left struggling with physical impacts, mental impacts, emotional impacts of losing somebody they love, and even financial impacts. So, you know, there's a lot for that caregiver to deal with.
That
is the voice of our guest. If you don't mind, Laura, I'm going to take us to the break here shortly, but I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to the voice of Rick Laubert, and Rick, am I saying your last name properly?
I appreciate the attempt. It's Lauber. It's just Lauber.
See, I should have just said Lauber. It's Rick Lauber from New Joyce. No, I'm just kidding. Rick Lauber, French Canadian. That was my grandparents. So, anyway, Rick Lauber, our wonderful guest today on Live with the Dementia Whisperer, Laura Wayman, author of two books, The Caregiver's Guide for Canadians and The Successful Caregiver's Guide. And both of these books are great Bibles, if you will, for the journey as a caregiver in whatever level, whatever circumstance you might find yourself, particularly, though, for elders, for dealing with elders or those who are maybe reaching end stage in life. And so there's a lot of important information, and I'd love to know from Rick Lauber, when we come back from the break, what are the first, you know, what are the red flags, Rick? What are the critical first four or five steps to do when you suddenly realize, whether chosen or not, that you're a primary caregiver for someone. You know, it's one of those things you, on the checkoff list you have to deal with. Laura, does that sound good to you?
Absolutely. I'd love to hear from that.
Very good. That is Laura Wayman. And you can also find her online. Of course, we're going to tell you all about that at the break. This is co-host Scott Cluthie here on Live with the Dementia Whisperer, Laura Wayman. Our guest today, Rick Lober. And we'll be back, and we want to hear from you, a question or comment. And first two callers today, free copy of Laura Wayman's groundbreaking book from Johns Hopkins University on dementia. The guest call-in line is 929-477-1393. So do stay with us, and we'll be right back after these important reminders.
You're listening to Live with the Dementia Whisperer. Laura Wayman will call in with your personal questions and concerns on the dementia journey. Call 929-477-1393 and visit Laura Wayman online at laurawayman.com. We'll be right back.
I want to thank my mommy for loving me so much, for taking me out to the park, for reading me books, for
taking me to the doctor when I broke my foot in ballet rehearsal,
for leaving me alone when I wanted to be alone.
And now, as a grown-up, I'm thankful for being able to take care of you, my dear mom, for having the chance to take you to the park, for reading you those books we enjoy so much, for being able to take you to your therapies after you twisted your ankle, for understanding that sometimes you simply want to be alone.
Roles change without us noticing. And in your new role, we help you help. Visit aarp.org/caregiving to get practical health and wellness tips to provide even better care for your loved one. Remember, visit aarp.org/caregiving. AARP, we help you help. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
The odds of becoming a signed artist and having 4 number one albums. 1 in 100 million. The odds of going on to win 7 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of this performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 68. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Autism Speaks, it's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Live with the Dementia Whisperer, Laura Wayman. We love to hear from our listeners. Call in at 929-477-1393 and visit Laura Wayman online at laurawayman.com. And now, Laura Wayman, the Dementia Whisperer. And this is co-host Scott Cluthie here live with you on this Wednesday evening across America, around the world, Blog Talk Radio and Live with the Dementia Whisperer. It's great to have you all out there. And welcoming back, of course, Laura Wayman. Hello, Laura.
Hello. Thanks for bringing us back in, Scott. Thanks for all you do, as always. I just don't know what I'd do without you.
You do quite well, actually. But thank you. I guess I'm your caregiver in radio, right?
That's right.
There you go.
Yes, and I don't want anybody to think that I believe that you are my unsung hero, because I sing about you all the time, right?
Yes, we do a duet, because I sing about you in Houston all the time. So there you go.
Yes, indeed.
Well, our great guest today is Rick Lober. There I go again. Just fancying it up, Rick. Rick Lober.
I appreciate that, Scott.
Yeah, you're most welcome, sir. Author of 2 great books, but also author of other properties as well. He's a writer, and you can tell when you read the books, as I said earlier, they're so well written and easy to comprehend and travel on your roadmap to senior care. The Caregiver's Guide for Canadians and the Successful Caregiver's Guide, and something you mentioned during the break, Rick, which is kind of interesting, that 2 critical issues that actually, we should touch on those, and one of those has to do with your ideas about the differences between male and female caregivers, something we've never really discussed on the air, Laura.
Well, that's really interesting. You know, we talked about that right before we went on the break, and I'm really wanting to learn from you, Rick, because I, of course, see a lot of differences, but I would love to see your perspective on that. So let's talk about that for a little while here.
Sure, I'd be happy to. You know, society, I think, recognizes more caregivers as females. You know, typically the job goes to an older daughter, a wife, and so those women are more commonly and typically caregivers. Not wanting to sound stereotypical, but I think women do make better caregivers than men simply because they're more patient, they're more supportive. Doesn't mean that a man can't be a good caregiver. It just means that a male caregiver provides different types of care. I didn't provide much hands-on care, but I served as a chauffeur for them. I drove them to doctor's appointments. I looked after their banking. I asked some difficult questions of long-term care homes and doctors when my sisters were uncomfortable doing that. So these type of things, men are the doers in society, and give us a challenging task, and we'll get it done, no matter what. It's kind of like, if a kitchen faucet is squeaky or leaking, we'll fix it, and we'll find an answer. And caregiving is somewhat similar. Give us something to do, we'll do it. So we're good in that respect, and that's where I really saw my strengths. As a male caregiver, men, another. Interesting point is, men don't like to talk and don't like to share. It kind of makes me a bit of a rarity. So we're the more quiet ones. And so, when you are a caregiver, one of the most important things to do is find an outlet for your stress, to be able to talk about it, to be able to share, to be able to vent. And, as a male, that is more difficult to do. Because you're uncomfortable with it. It's not your personality to do that. And B, you may not find another male in your social circle to be willing to listen. So there's another fence that were another wall for male caregivers too. So a few points there.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I see that as well. And I've also seen some amazing men. For example, there's a gentleman that comes to my caregiver support group that I have once a month that has cared for his wife. He recently found that in part of his journey, he needed to place his wife. He had been caring for her at home for several years, and she has very advanced dementia. And just listening to his journey from his perspective, he's just a warm, loving, wonderful caregiver. But all the different things that he had to learn from the male perspective, caring for his wife with dementia, I could write a whole another book on the different perspectives that the different genders have as they care for either their dad or their mom, as a male or a female caregiver, as a spouse. It's so interesting how this, for example, this particular gentleman and many have stepped up and never done anything like this before. This particular gentleman was a pilot in the Air Force. And, a real man's man, and all the different things he had to learn to do for his wife. And they, of course, had children, and his wife was the main care provider for the children. And, of course, this gentleman was a great parent, but he didn't provide that hands-on care for the kids. He was off, doing his pilot thing. And so he had to learn in many ways a very different perspective in that relationship, and he is just such a model, such an example. And there's many, many men that have had to step in it, just like you, Rick, that had to step into those shoes. And like we talked about earlier in the show, we're not prepared for that, that we have to learn as we go. This is actual experiential training. And then everybody's situation is different, so you can't even compare it to someone else, or you can learn from other people, but you still have to take that knowledge and then be fluid and flexible and customize it in your own setting. So, you know, I love hearing from, like, your perspective on this, Rick. This is very fascinating to me.
Thank you. I point to your point about experience. You know, I find a lot of people coming into the caregiving role, they don't have any background professional experience. You know, speaking for myself, you know, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not a banker, I'm not a social worker. I don't have any kind of related experience to help me in my caregiving, you know, during those years. You know, my background is communications, and you know, that can help to a certain degree with talking to people. But, you know, I had no knowledge, no background of you know, what to expect and you know, where to find help exactly.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Our guest, Rick Lober, and author of two great books on caregiver's journey. I mean, the information in here is priceless regardless of what kind of situation, what disease, what stage of aging, whatever it might be that you're dealing with as a caregiver. This is really important information. I did kind of talk about the punch out list and the priority of things to do before the break, about things like making sure the papers are in order and these kinds of things. These are critical, but it's easy when you're in the whirlwind of a crisis, which is usually, hey, mom fell down, she's not getting up again, I told you about this at Thanksgiving, you better get over here and do something, I can't, I'm leaving for Europe today, get over there and help mom. That kind of situation, which happens every day across America, Canada, around the world, every day. And then it's all analytical, and it's all, you know, kind of hypothetical until reality sets in. So these are great points that Rick has in his books, The Caregiver's Guide for Canadians, and its companion book, The Successful Caregiver's Guide. By the way, Rick, how do we get copies of your great books?
Well, thank you very much for asking. I appreciate that. The Caregiver's Guide for Canadians is available in Canada at Chapters and Indigo bookstores. It's also available on Amazon.ca. In the States, the Successful Caregiver's Guide is available at Barnes & Noble bookstores.
Mm-hmm.
Very
good.
It's also available on Amazon.com.
Very good. I wanted to follow up, Laura, if I might, with a little about some of the things that you mentioned also at the break, which Laura talks about all the time, and this is so true. And it has to do with caregivers taking care of themselves. It's so easy to leave yourself out of the equation, especially for ladies. We all know that.
Yes, we do.
Yeah, Rick, what about that? Some of the thoughts about that, the caregivers taking care of themselves.
Caring for yourself is crucial. I could stand on my soapbox on this topic for hours. You know, really, when you're taking care of somebody else, your focus, your natural focus, is going to be on that person. You know, if you think of a target, if you're shooting, say, a bow and arrow, and you aim that arrow right towards the target, that is your focus. And that is similar to caregiving, because a caregiver will focus entirely on mom or dad, their aging loved one. You know, when you do that, a person does have limits. You know, we have two arms, we have two legs, we have two hands. We can only do so much. And, you know, so it's important to recognize those limits, you know, avoid, you know, resist multitasking, and just slow down, take a break, delegate that work to somebody else, and walk away for a while. You know, rest and recharge your batteries, and you'll become a better person, and you know, have it easier.
You know, and along those lines, in your book, you talk about, and I have personal experience with this, the challenge of also being a provider and a worker in the world, and caregiving comes along and plops itself into the middle of your life. And caregiving is not 9 to 5, and caregiving doesn't care if you have to be there at 8:15, and caregiving doesn't care if you get home at 5, because something's happening at 2. And I personally had and I've never talked about this with Laura on the air, but I had a tremendous job producing videos here in Houston commercially. I loved that job, doing commercial video production for companies and so on. Unfortunately, my late wife was starting to pass away from cancer in my home, along with my mother-in-law in the other room, dying from dementia, all at the same time. And I was terminated because I was spending too much time with my dying wife while I wasn't even being paid not to be there, which devastated me financially, needless to say, for a long time. You just don't snap your fingers and get video production jobs, plus dealing with two dying women on my hands. So, and you had a situation at work, Rick, where you had to juggle that. Talk a little about that and the pressures on the breadwinner, quote-unquote, to deal with the reality of the interface with the working world, too.
Exactly right, Scott. You know, caregiving can be a full-time job in itself. 20 to 30 hours per week is not unrealistic. You know, so you add that to, you know, 40 hours for a full-time job, and where do people find the time? You know, they need to balance. That's easier said than done, and they need to find an accommodating and an agreeable employer that understands their situation and allows them time to take those breaks, you know, to be with mom or dad, or to take them to a doctor's appointment, or to stay at home if necessary and get the paperwork done, whatever. You know, it's becoming a worse, you know, a more important situation to deal with. You know, my answer at the time, you know, I worked part-time. I was working full-time, but I spoke with my employer and reduced my hours to part-time. So I think I was down to about three days a week. Obviously, that affected me financially. However, it gave me a couple of extra days per week to be more available for mom and dad. And at that time, you know, my parents obviously were my priority.
Well, that
very
is
good. Thank you.
Both of those stories are just so heartbreaking. And I often have talked about that most companies need to have an employment assistance program that is based, and some companies do have this, but that is based in the fact that a caregiver who is caring for an elderly parent or spouse or, you know, they need to have that time to be able to do that and to work with their employer so that you can make these kinds of decisions in your life so that you can be a good caregiver and realize the expectations that are realistic about juggling both of those things in your life. It's so important that you can spend time with for example, your spouse that you were losing, Scott. It was so important that,
yes,
that your employer understand that and give you time, knowing that you weren't really taken away from the company, that it would just make you a better employee at the end of that as well. And Rick, it's so nice that you had the opportunity to work with your employer and be able to cut back on the hours and still benefit and contribute to your employer as well. You know, we really need to have a call to hand to how important this is.
You know, definitely. It's, you know, it is becoming more and more prevalent in our society, and you know, it affects not only the caregiver, the working caregiver, it also affects the employer. You know, if an employee leaves, a long-time employee leaves, that employer is left with a hole and has to advertise, has to, you know, spend time and money to interview potential candidates, to train them. And so it costs the employer money to potentially replace a longtime stable employee. And, you know, in my book, say it's better to work with that the employee who's proven than to take a chance on a new one.
And educating that caregiver that they also need to ask for help, that they can't do it by themselves, and to look into, for example, your books that would have resources, where to go, how to find help, because you've kind of paved that road for folks because you've had that experience like we talked about. And so, you know, the employers, they have these kinds of things to help educate their employees that there is help out there. We can all work together, you know, build their village, and in the end, that just really benefits everybody, because caregiving, you know, we're not going to see less of this. We're going to see more. This is just going to be more and more of this silent pandemic, and to make people dementia aware and to make people caregiving aware is just one of my missions in life. And so, Rick, thank you for helping with this information, with what you are doing on your end, and, of course, what Scott does. And the more people that we can get this information to, it's just absolutely priceless.
It's my pleasure. You know, to be honest with you, sharing my story was not only therapeutic to me, to explain what was going on and to get rid of some of that excess baggage that I was dealing with after my parents died, you know, but I also know full well that it helps prospective new and current caregivers as well. So that's
you know, Rick, the thing is, one of the things you talked about that I can so relate to is that moment. You know, your mom passed first, 2 years later your father passed. I don't think that's unusual. My grandparents, my grandmother passed away a year later. My grandfather passed away. My mother passed away. My father passed away 2 years later. I mean, it's just like,
wow,
amazing, the bond. But I remember reading about you talking. Your father passed away. They wheel him out to an elevator. You turn around, the door's closed. That's the end of that. And yep, until you've experienced these things, both the entire arc of caregiving, as the Laura says with dementia, the one-way river that doesn't go back, until you've experienced these things, you can't understand the devastation it can do to you and to those around you and how it can affect you. But I think it makes us a better human being. And I know it's increased your sensitivity in many ways. So it's like these experiences are life. That's what life is many times. We don't choose it, but it presents itself. And mm-hmm. as it presents itself, we become, I feel, a much more whole, caring, and compassionate human being. And that is a caregiver.
Those are among the joys of caregiving. You know, caregiving is often portrayed as very negative. There's a lot of stress and overwhelmed feelings with the job. You know, a lot of negative family dynamics that come into play, but you know, as you mentioned, there are positives, and you know, you become a stronger person. You can become more organized. You can develop better relationships with your parents, with your siblings, you know, and a number of other things as well. You become more confident too.
Absolutely. That is so important. And Rick, when just kind of out of curiosity, you obviously are a great writer. And how difficult was it for you to did you self-publish? Did you is there I didn't check into this, and it's just something I'm a bit curious about. Did you self-publish? Did you publish through a publisher there in Canada? Tell me how your book got published.
Sure. My publisher is a traditional publishing house, Self Counsel Press. They're based out of North Vancouver. They do a lot of self-help books, legal, you know, banking, writing, business books, these type of things. You know, caregiving was something that they were interested in. You know, I did a little research online. I checked their website and read up on their writer's guidelines. You know, if you wanted to write for us, here are the titles that we're looking for. Here are the topics we want to cover. And elder care was one of those. And you know, I kind of smiled to myself and I said, well, you know, I've got the experience. I think I've got the writing chops. You know, I've got a lot of this written already because that was one thing I did when Mom and Dad were alive was I wrote to cope. So I did have a lot of material stockpiled saved on my computer already. So, you know, I approached self-counsel. I sent them a proposal, with the book outline, the proposed chapters, you know, introduced myself as the proposed author and explained why I wanted to write the book and who my potential readers were and why this book was so important. And they loved it. 6 months later, I had a contract.
Well, they should because it's just a wonderful guide and lots of valuable tools and tips. So needed. So necessary. It's just amazing to me how caregiving is really in the forefront, and yet there's so much stigmatization and misunderstanding, especially when it comes to dementia. I talk about this often, and it really is barriers and obstacles to these folks finding the right appropriate care, the right help for them, for their loved ones. And so I really am very encouraged, and I'm so excited that you reached out to us, Rick, and you wanted to talk about this. I think that we have lots more to talk about, but we're already almost out of time, which is amazing to me. I can't believe how quickly the time flies when you're having so much fun.
As you said, the hour flew by.
It does, doesn't it? I mean, we've just barely touched on this, so... You know, I would love it, Rick, if you would come back and perhaps maybe we can have a more specific, I really wanted to get to know you today, but more specific topics and pick a little bit more detail out of both of your books. I would love that if you could do that for us.
I'd be happy to discuss that. You know, we can connect via email afterwards and make some arrangements.
The other thing that I would love to do is come and speak in your beautiful country. So we'll have to talk about that. I would love to. I travel all over the United States. I would love to come and share my dementia knowledge and expertise and my very different program. My program and my care approach is very different. And so we'll have to talk about that, Rick. Maybe we could plan something.
I'm open to all opportunities, Laura.
Great. That's wonderful. And I would like to thank all of our listeners for joining us today. What a marvelous topic, and I know I learned so much, and I'm sure, Scott, you feel that way too, don't you? This was really a great, very informative day.
Yeah, and I definitely want next time to go into the differences as Canada has a national health care program, and we're just taking baby steps here, some of the distinctions. I think that's a whole other piece I want to talk about, Rick.
That's a two-hour show, Scott.
Yeah, I know.
Yes, please make us more Canada aware.
More Canada.
More Canada aware, yes. All right, so... Caregivers, nothing in your life can prepare you for this journey of caring for a loved one with any cause of dementia, and we are truly honored that you came to us today. It takes a lot of courage to call in and to listen and to reach out to me or Scott or to Rick. And Rick, could you please give our listening audience some way that they might be able to contact you?
Certainly. The best way to reach me is directly through my website. It's www.ricklauber.com, RICKLAUBER.com. And I've got an email address on there. I've got Twitter and Facebook links as well.
Wonderful.
Very good.
Our closing thought today is caregivers are often the casualties, the hidden victims. No one sees the sacrifices they make. So that certainly is apropos for what we're talking about. We want you to know, caregivers, that we see these sacrifices. And thank you for joining us on Live with the Dementia Whisperer today.
You've been listening to Live with the Dementia Whisperer featuring Laura Wayman. Get your copy of A Loving Approach to Dementia Care and connect with Laura at laurawayman.com and join the Dementia Whisperer's newsletter. Send email questions, ideas, and comments to help@laurawayman.com and join Laura Wayman on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. This is Scott Cluthy, co-host and executive producer. Join us next time for Live with the Dementia Whisperer, Laura Wayman.